2023, and I call to order this meeting of the Orange County Water District Water Issues Committee. And
can you be part of this?
With that, I want to ask our president, Kathy Green, to lead us in the pledge.
The only one here.
Where'd you get a pledge?
Why can't we just do
for which it's handed? One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You please conduct a roll call.
Roll call, Director Whittaker.
Here.
Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Tran. Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Sheldon. Director Meek. Director Mezqua. Director Mezqua.
Who was there?
Oh. I can't hear them. Can they hear me?
Director Green?
Yes.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Great. Thank you. I will look to my left here and ask if there are any items received too late to be agendized.
There are none.
I wasn't sure which
Can
one
you
of
guys you... hear me? I apologize. Can you hear me?
Welcome. It is now time for visitor participation. This would be the time to address this committee. If anyone has an item to discuss that doesn't appear on this agenda but is within our jurisdiction, is there anyone in the room or virtually who wishes to address the committee?
Director Mezqua, can you hear us? I don't think she can hear us. We could hear her, but she can't hear us. Director Mezqua?
Can you hear me or no?
Yes.
I can hear you, yes. Can you hear us?
Can hear us, but they're not speaking loud enough.
Can you hear the other?
They can't hear us.
The Director Bilodeau hears?
Can any of them hear
us? I think everyone else can hear us.
Director Rowe, can you hear us?
Director yes, Yelp. I can hear you loud and clear.
Goodness.
It's just that. It's just
wow.
Disturbing. It's disturbed.
I just told Caesar it's her sister.
Maybe she can call him by phone.
Somebody's coming. Okay, Caesar's there.
I figured I'd give her a moment here.
Why?
Let me zoom back.
Could have her call you and then put her on speaker. Or have Caesar call you.
Call Caesar.
She's trying to connect on something else. Can you hear us now, Director Mezqua?
I can. I'm on my cell phone, though, because my desktop's not working. They're going to put me in a conference room with Dennis and Caesar. We're here. So can you give me a minute?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. I apologize.
All right. So we do want to move for sure.
Well, I can't go unless you can fix it here.
Well, I see you're
okay, can you guys hear me now?
Looks fine.
We can hear you.
Yep.
So,
You're on mute now, Director Mesqua.
Okay, what's going on? Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. Can you hear us? Okay.
Yeah, so Dennis is here with me and Caesar.
Okay, great.
Well, we will proceed. We do have consent calendar items 1 through 6. If the directors have had a chance to review those, is there any item that you wish to discuss? And if not, I would entertain a motion.
Bruce, I have a question about the lease Bell's Vireo monitoring contract.
Okay, yes.
I'll go here just so it's not echoing. I see that the contract's for like $150,000, and I understand what it's for, and I understand why we do it. It's a requirement of our agreements with the Fish and Wildlife. But just my question to the staff is this something that we have to do annually? Can we do it biannually? I mean, the lease Bell's Vireo bird has obviously had a tremendous recovery thanks to our efforts, and but 150 grand is a lot of money. So I'm just curious if what's the bare minimum we have to do in terms of monitoring at this point going forward? That's my question.
You want? Okay. Thank you, Director Bildo. We'll have Lisa Haney give a response for you.
I think that's a great question. I am reviewing the contracts right now and the regulatory obligations and performing a summary analysis. I'd be happy to give you an update at the next meeting.
And I think this was for 2 years, Director Bilodeau. It's $75,000 a year for a two-year period. And this is something that the Vireo does come on an annual basis. So we do have to perform the surveys on an annual basis. And we've been using Mr. Pike for a considerable amount of time. He is considered an expert in the field. So this is just an extension of that contract to help augment staff in monitoring the Vireo.
And just to add on, we have a regulatory requirement to have 4 staff in that effort. And so he counts as one of the 4.
Okay. So these birds are migratory and they go to Cancun or something for the winter, or how does this work exactly?
Yeah, I think they actually go to Puerto Vallarta. Well, yes, they are migratory.
Okay. It sounds like I know we have a threshold requirement to meet in terms of the monitoring to support our flooding operations behind the dam. So I just wanted to point out that I hope that we're closely monitoring our expenditures in that arena, given the successes we've had. And I'd be curious to know, not today, but at some point, when our monitoring obligations tail off, given the that the bird has recovered. And so with that, I'd be happy to move that item.
Okay, we're just a bit out of sequence, but we'll handle that item first. Item number 3. It's been moved by Director Bilodeau.
I'll second.
Second. With that, roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Roll call, Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Nguyen. Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Mesqua.
Yes.
That item carries with 5-0.
Now we have the other 5 consent items, absent number 3. Any questions or statements involving those items? We had none earlier. If not, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Yes.
I'll second.
Thank you, Director Yeo. And with that, a roll call on the other 5 items.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Mesqua?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. I had intended to point out on item number six, it's a little bit bittersweet to see John Kennedy now being appointed to the project committees 22 and 23 at SAPA. So welcome to SAPA.
Thank you. Officially. Well, it's better for us than sweet for them.
Bittersweet that Mike, who's been such a fixture there for so long since I've been involved at SAPA, but I know that John's going to do a great job there as well.
Absolutely.
And with that, we have an informational item, update on field headquarters activities in preparation for the winter season. Good afternoon.
I've been.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, we have a presentation, informational presentation by Mr. Ben Smith, who is in charge of our operations up at the field headquarters and at Prada. So we thought that this would be a good opportunity, seeing that we're coming into the rainy season, to give the committee and the board members an opportunity to see what we're doing up there. So with that, Ben.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. So yeah, it's an informational update, just kind of what we've been up to, how we're getting ready for winter. So here on the cover slide is some of the bulldozers working in the Off River. So the Off River, we don't really remove sediment, clogging sediment from there. It is a conveyance, so the water moves through there. It does move some of that sediment on its own. Most of the cleaning effort in that location is the vegetation. And making sure the channel is level so that we can maximize the percolation area. So what, in words, what we've been up to, we had Prado Dam full until June, which is later than typical. And so what that means is our facilities are brim full until Prado is empty. And so we were brim full into June. Then we start our process of lowering the water levels in our basins so that we can clean them and do our maintenance and things. So that was, you know, later than average in an average year. So yeah, our focus is to percolate, get that water in the ground as quickly as we can so that we can get things drying out and be able to clean them with the heavy equipment. Hillary came, great gift, almost 11,000 acre feet out of that storm. If you count what got captured at Prado and what we captured locally. It was in not expected at this time of year to get a storm like that in August. So it did, you know, interrupt our process of drying things and cleaning them. But we worked through it. and, you know, that's a great story. It's water early in the season. So
that all happened in one day, in a 24-hour period.
Correct. Yeah, Hillary. So at this point, all the available basins have been cleaned. Two of the deeper basins, the ones that are dug further into the ground, we've been struggling with seepage in those locations. I have some photos coming up, but the groundwater levels are so high, the water comes up through the floor. So the floor doesn't dry out in order to clean it with the heavy equipment. So with the basins down, a lot of our pumps are submersible pumps. So we can only service them when the water is out of the lake. So we were able to service our pump stations, change the oil, do inspections, those things. We completed our annual big push at the Prado Wetlands to remove a lot of vegetation to make sure we have the right mix of open water and vegetation. And we've been managing the vegetation at the recharge area in field headquarters. We have a little bit left vegetation to still clear. So I have a series of pictures. On the top left here is Anaheim Lake, and you can see we've pumped all the water out. The floor is wet. That is water coming up through the floor. So we call that, I call it seepage. I don't know if that's the right term in hydrogeology, but
is that considered water mounding also in your work?
Very shallow water tables basically right there.
And so, yeah, Anaheim, we've, I think we're on month 3 or 4 of having it empty and just barely getting to clean the majority of the floor. It's taken that long for the water levels to drop. On the bottom right is Riverview, one of our smaller basins. It's got a smaller bulldozer in there working the side slope. But you can start to see in this picture, see this white material? This is the silt chip when it dries, the silt and clay material. That's what we're removing with the heavy equipment. So we remove that and we're left with the sand that, you know, percolates very quickly, the water. So here's a nicer view of that. In this left side, you see these, we call them chips, but when they're wet, it's a solid layer of silt and clay. And when they dry, they collapse, the water evaporates, and that's why they chip, they crack up. So our main strategy for removing them, we use a motor grader. And so it just barely scrapes the chips. We leave the sand underneath. And it makes windrows. It puts them in, you know, like a farm windrow. And then on the right here, you see a scraper coming along, and it's picking up the windrow that was left by the motor grader. Then we take that material out of the basin. We store it on the side. So on the right here, we did have an opportunity to get into part of Burris Basin. This area hadn't been worked in a few years, so we were able to get in there and work it and try to recover some additional percolation there. The top left, this is some of our staff in one of the submersible pump stations. You can see it's not the easiest work environment. You know, they're in waders in the water. They have to, because of the seepage issues, they have to be pumping water out while they're in there. So it's a coordination effort. But they're changing the oil and making sure everything's working. In the bottom right, this is a picture of Prado, the wetlands. So in this photo, that long reach excavator is removing vegetation from just a conveyance channel. That's not what we call the pond, but the vegetation gets so thick in there that the water can't flow through. So that's an activity we have to do in order to keep the wetlands productive. So Mr. Marcus's favorite graph. I did eliminate some lines. But let me start with a green line here. It's on the right axis. This is rainfall. So the last time I showed this was right after Hillary. This big peak here, the shown in orange, which is the Prado storage level. And then the main takeaway here I want to drive is the blue line. That's our storage at our recharge facilities. So you can see Hillary's impact that refilled us quite a ways. And we've been coming down. We had a little pick up here. Irvine Lake discharged some water to us. And we've just been percolating since. You can see that small storm event we had in November right here that picked up about 500 acre feet out of that storm at Prado.
The other thing is our precipitation has been
off. Yes, other than hurricane or however you want to define it, Hillary storm. So this is the same data. It's just in numbers, presented a little differently. I organized it in the basin order of basin holding the most water down to the least. These are not all our facilities. We have 26 different facilities. These are the bigger ones. So Santiago Basin's about half full. The Warner system is full. We support the fishing business there. Burris is down quite a ways. And La Palma Basin and Mira Loma Basin are dedicated to GWS, so we wouldn't put river water in there. So they're just responding to production of the treatment plant and their percolation rate. Are they clogging or not? Anaheim and Kramer, we've been battling the seepage, but in terms of storage, they're completely available. So if you add up all the water we have stored, just under 13,000 acre feet. And so what do we have available to capture storms coming in is just under 12,000 acre feet. So I have some pictures of the basins. What do they look like? So it's like a little mini tour of the forebay. This is the head gates. Down in the bottom of the picture, you can see SAR is Santa Ana River. You see the water's ponded up. That's held up by our rubber dam, this, you know, this gray bubble across the channel. And then to the right there, you see some infrastructure. Those are the trash rake. So that's where we first place we divert water out of the river into our system. And so this these ponds on the right, they're served for desilting. We're trying to get the sediment to drop out of the water before it goes to a location to recharge. So we call them the desilting ponds or the weir ponds. And then, yeah, just for reference, this is right next to the 91 freeway. So here's field headquarters. Right next to us is Warner Lake. We call Little Warner. This is where the fishing business is, Santa Ana Lakes. And so feeding Warner is Conrock, Foster, Huckleberry. And then you also get a view here of what we call the off river. It's a conveyance channel that runs parallel to the river itself. Here's a view down towards the end of our system that's adjacent to the river. This is Burris Basin. So that area we cleaned is right under the label Burris. That's where I showed a picture earlier, the equipment working. You can see on the left, the Santa Ana River, and if you notice how smooth it is, we constantly use the bulldozers there to smooth it and to agitate the surface to keep the silt flowing so that it doesn't settle on top and clog the percolation. Here's Santiago Basin. Sometimes we talk about the two connected basins individually. In the front here is Bond, in the background is Blue Diamond. If you remember what was referred to as the Saddle Project or the Intertide Project, that's here in between them. So it's about half full right now. Here's Anaheim Lake, just picture from yesterday. So the lake is empty. You can see, maybe you can make out this darker region across this area, and then in the back, the water there. So this is the seepage that's continuing, and a little bit of discharge from the city of Anaheim's PFAS project, where they're doing startup and they need to discharge water to us. This body on the middle left, that's Mira Loma Basin. You see it's the only one with water in it right now. That's GWS water being recharged. And then behind that, Kramer and Miller. This next picture, I'm going to flip the view. So now we're close to Kramer. You can just see a closer view of it. And Miller, that's a joint facility with flood control. And Mira Loma, Anaheim Lake in the back. So you notice in Kramer, it's very, very wet just in this one area. This is what I'm calling seepage also. It's it might be related to the water Mira Loma is recharging. Maybe Kramer's so deep that it's coming in there. But effectively what that does is when it's wet like that, we can't get in with the equipment to remove the clogging material. But the rest of the basin we've cleaned. So more than, it's about 75% of the floor we have been able to clean. And those who are interested in the background here is the Deamer, Metropolitan Deamer treatment plant up on the hill there, Yorba Linda. So moving a little south, there's La Palma Basin. And again, you see the same basins in the background, but La Palma and Mira Loma are going full blast because the treatment plant goes full blast year round. All right, so another graph I'm going to get fired over, but I'm not going to dive into the details. I just want to show the concept, the visual of this. What this is El Nino or La Nina. Okay, so there's a zero line in the middle. If you're above this line, it's an El Nino condition. This is dating back to 1990, all the way on the left, all the way through today on the right. If you're below the middle line, you're La Nina. So historically, people have, or it's been a good correlation that in an El Nino year, you should get above average rainfall. In a La Nina, below average. So you can see right now, we are above the strong line, or this measurement is above the strong line. It's a strong El Nino.
So these are predictive.
Yeah, basically we're predicting the...
This is what predictions have been since 1990.
Yes, basically.
Current day.
Thank you. So I'm complicated here, but this is the rainfall. Right across the zero line is our average rainfall. So this is our actual data. So above the center line would be an above average year, below the line, a below average year. So what I did is I used Christmas colors and highlighted where it was a good predictor or not. So green, it was a good predictor. Red, it was not. So is El Nino a good rain predictor? I would say they get it right more than half the time.
So last year, all the way over the bar graph, you can see how the shaded blue area was below zero. So we were projecting a La Nina. There was projected to be lower rainfall. But in reality, it shot through the roof. So the model was off, I guess, for last year. And like Ben says, it's about a coin flip when people talk about El Nino, La Nina.
And the weather service, the NOAA weather service, they say the same thing. They say in recent history, El Nino, La Nina is not correlated to our rainfall.
Is there a better predictor?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't.
Not long term. I mean, we're hoping that atmospheric rivers and some of the modeling we're doing give us at least a month window, but nothing that we can predict months ahead.
Director Sheldon?
Chair.
What were the parameters on the prediction? What data went into it? How long was it done before the actual event?
So what El Nino is, it's a warming of the ocean, the Pacific Ocean,
yes. You
know, near the equator. So when we say it's a prediction, that data is really the measurement of how warm that water is. So that's real time. And so right now they're saying strong El Nino, that means historically they would think in January, February, we'd be getting that rain. So I guess that.
So what's the data to make the conclusion? The warmth, the temperature of the water?
Yes.
Thank you. And can we get some more detail on that?
Now or a different, come back to that?
Yeah. I guess later is fine. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, in general, the warming of the ocean controls the jet stream. So the storms are still coming across the ocean. It's just in a typical La Nina, they're hitting north, you know, or Washington, Canada. And in El Nino, it brings it down into SoCal.
I've read what you just stated in that. I was looking for like a summary of the details of, maybe I'll get to me later when, you know, they this temperature and this thing extrapolated that, and I'm just looking for some more information.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm not an expert. Maybe I went beyond my knowledge with the graph, but
I just have one question for clarification. So the results, the actual experience here is strictly Southern California, right?
Yeah, that's our field headquarters rain gauge data.
Would we see a slightly different outcome if we were including Central and Northern California on those years as well?
Yeah, so the Weather Service, they say El Nino does consistently result in slightly above average rain for the state of California.
For the statewide, yes.
So it's a little better for the state.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So they do seasonal forecasts, and this hinges on the El Nino. So these are their computer models. They put in all their data, and they're in November, and they're trying to guess what it's going to rain all the way out through February. And so they're saying, you know, an El Nino, strong El Nino has a lot to do with this. They think we're going to have above average rainfall. For reference, the same graph a year ago, it said dry. And then we know how it turned out. I think this is my last slide. I know these are complicated. If you've heard of the Scripps or the CW3 agency, they're doing a lot of work on FIRO. This is one of the graphics they put out a couple times a day. It's predicting atmospheric rivers. And so they do it all the way up the coast. We are basically around 34 north latitude, this inside this red box I've drawn. And the way this chart works, today is on the right. And as you move to the left, you're going forward in time a day. So right now, this is from last night's prediction. They are, you see some color showing up here on the 17th, that's Sunday. If you look at the green, the blue colors, so 25 to 40% chance an atmospheric river's hitting them. Today, they revise this at least twice a day. It's already showing a lot more activity for next week here. But again, they're low probabilities. So with that, if anyone's still awake,
I was going to ask, Lisa, do you have something to
address previous
questions? Oh, certainly. Absolutely. Yes.
I'm done.
You can address that before we have other comments, sir.
Director Bilodeau, you asked a very good question earlier, and I wanted to take a moment to address that in a little bit more detail now that I know what agenda item we are on. You had asked about the monitoring requirements for Vireo. Currently, the obligation is in continuum for as long as we're doing water conservation. It's tied to that effort, and the Vireo have been very successful. However, they are not fully back to their habitat numbers of which they previously were. Mm-hmm. And so we are obligated to continue monitoring. The agenda item for today was to extend a contract for staff. And the reason for that is we have a regulatory obligation to have four biologists for the effort. And currently we're down a biologist because our director of natural resources is still in recruitment, and we need this contract to help bridge that gap and onboard our new director.
Okay. Yeah, I know that the numbers have recovered for the Vireo. They were from like 10 nesting pairs to like 400. So I'd be surprised if we're not at the all-time record. So for what it's worth.
So what you're saying is until the numbers are back at what the target should be, it requires continuous monitoring.
I think in fact, it's actually just associated by U.S. Fish and Wildlife as an obligation of doing water conservation. I'm not sure if it's related to metrics of achieving previous habitat, but I'm happy to look into that and happy to do a presentation on the specific monitoring program at a later meeting if you would like.
Hey, do you know what the status is of the bird? Is it threatened or endangered?
Oh, that's a great question. Adam, do you know? No, I think it's threatened. Yeah, I think it's threatened. I know that the two big populations right now are at Camp Pendleton and behind Prado. Extend anywhere else. So it's still pretty limited.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Schultz.
Going on year round or just during that certain spring season?
It's during the nesting season, yeah, to see what their recruitment is because they're migratory. So we monitor them when they are here nesting.
And we have to send them out like six times, I believe, or we have to send our colleagues out six different times?
I need to further understand the exact monitoring requirements. We're trying to tease that out right now and put it into a software solution so that it's more transparent for you guys to see and for our biologists to see to make sure that we're meeting all the compliance obligations. So I don't know the exact details yet because we're still pulling them out. But I, again, would be happy to come back and present on that. I'm sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. Seeing nothing further on that, wanted to, sorry to preempt you, Ben, on that. That was a very good presentation. And looks like we're making great use of the drones, because some of that photography was really enlightening to me. Start to really get a sense of the entire landscape there. Any other questions or comments involving the presentation? Seeing none, and seeing none virtually as well, I would provide direction as to the six consent items to be placed on our consent calendar for our next board meeting at the December 20th board meeting. And with that, are there any directors' announcements or reports? Seeing none, I just have one of my own to provide. On Monday, I went to the dedication of well number 22 at the Yorba Linda Water District. And it was pretty well attended, but I was asked to say something on behalf of Kelly Rowe. So I gladly did that, and I was able to on the basis of OCWD and SAPA as well. So just wanted to let you know that, in fact, that was one of the things I found out when I arrived there, was that Kelly's wife had played a role on the design of this well, of well number 22. So she had a pretty big impact on that coming about. So with that, are there any general manager's announcements, reports?
Nothing to report.
Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Many of you, yeah.